Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Potters, beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Just got back in town, home for a six-game homestand. Padres, Mets. Padres just were swept by the Phillies, finished their worst road trip in a couple years. Ryan, where would you like to start?
Kevin, the last time we talked when they were heading into Philadelphia, I think we said that this was an inflection point for their season. And what happens in that Philadelphia series? Well, they get swept. Sort of new things started springing leaks that weren't springing leaks before. The team continues to not hit. On a scale of zero to panic, Kevin, where is this team right now as they head into a three-game series against the Mets?
You know, I think they're in a state of shock to a certain extent. Now, this is me like kind of interpreting that, you know, I'm around it every day. And they don't have answers. They're trying to sort of remake themselves. You saw that with a roster move. You've seen it with like different substitutions, different starting, lineups. Hey, we're going to run more, but hey, we also know that our big guys just need to hit. Like, I think they're at a loss. They know they need to sort of change who they are, but the fact is however much they change, if, you know, Manny Machado's not going to hit, then what are they doing? But, like, you know, baseball is a funny game. This is the beginning of an inflection point. It really is. Then you got the Mets, who are struggling as well. And I just think baseball, like, it's insane. The Padres go to Washington, lose two of three. The Marlins go into Washington and sweep the Nationals. The Marlins had just been swept by the Mets, who then went to Seattle and lost 2-3 to the Mariners, who the Padres swept 3 weeks ago. When you play a team, how you're playing, how they're playing, like, you have the Mets coming in here, last place in the NL East, the Padres are plummeting. What happens this weekend? How do both teams' fan bases feel after that? How do both teams feel after that? The thing about baseball is we have to talk about it every day and then here every series and then they play every day and it could change. All of that is to say, I'm feeling pretty bad about the Padres right now, but I don't have confidence in that bad feeling. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Well, and they're, like you mentioned earlier, they've made a couple roster moves here in the last few days, trying to get the roster perhaps more athletic, question mark. The big news here is that Nick Castellanos was DFA'd. They DFA'd Castellanos on Monday, called up Jace Bowen before Tuesday's game against the Phillies in Philadelphia. Jace Bowen is a guy who you saw a lot of. We talked a little bit about him on our last podcast. And then in addition to that, they brought up Samad Taylor. Samad Taylor is, like Jace Bowen, a minor league free agent signee. Like Jace Bowen, played a lot in spring training. What do each of these guys bring, and what do you think the roles are going forward for both guys?
Right, and Jace Bowen was brought up. It was like they knew both were going to happen when they made them. But Ramon Laureano goes on the IL, and he's struggling. So now you've got two outfielders for two outfielders. Let's be honest, Jace Bowen, who, like, I'm a big Jace Bowen guy, got to give him a chance. He looks like he's just learned how to play baseball at the plate.
Yeah, he looks
like
lost.
It's that bad. Yeah. And that could change at any moment when they go, hey, here's what you look for. Here's what you wait for. You know, listen, man, just go back to being who you are. Don't try too hard. Whatever it is that's happening at the plate where he is chasing balls that, like, there's just no way they brought him up if that's what he was doing in AAA. But my point there is, for these guys to help them, be it as getting on base themselves or being a pinch runner for other guys who got on base late in games or whatever, like, they got to get on base. This was never meant, Samad Taylor and Jace Bowen, to be the fix for the season. It was meant to say, hey, if we are going to change sort of how we attack games offensively and a little bit defensively, we're going to do that in the interim while we wait for Manny and Merrill and maybe Tatis to get a little more slug. Manny to hit more, Merrill to hit more, maybe Xander Bogaerts to hit more. And so it's just like this something. Why do I not have anything great to say about those two guys coming up? because it's not like they just brought up their number one prospect, or their number two prospect, or their number 30 prospect. They just brought up some guys because things aren't going well.
Right. And bringing up guys makes it look like you're being proactive, which they are. But it doesn't change the cause of their problems, which is that their superstars aren't playing like superstars. Kevin, before we close the book on Nick Castellanos' time with the Padres, what's your takeaway from the 2 months or whatever he was with the team?
Well, first, I want to say, like, I was surprised it happened this quick. Like, you know, he has value as a pinch hitter. You've put Jace Bowen in, or you kept Jace Bowen in one night, and you put Jace Bowen in another night in the ninth inning. And like we said, he's lost. Nick Castellanos, has he lately been coming through in those situations? Well, no, not for like the last week or so, but like he has this year. I was surprised. I was. Now, Nick Castellanos was not pleased with his role and would like to go have a chance to go play somewhere. We'll see if that happens. Look, he made some veterans happy. He made the Padres winners a few times. I don't see how you could have any problem with Nick Castellanos' tenure here unless your expectations were too high for Nick Castellanos. Like you thought you were getting 29-year-old Nick Castellanos, 27-year-old Nick Castellanos. You weren't. Like did exactly what he was supposed to do here. I really do think that this had a lot to do, and if you read between the lines and you listen to some people, this had a lot to do with Nick Castellanos just couldn't quite get his arms around this role as much as the Padres wanting to move on from Castellanos.
Right. He wants to play every day. He wants to hit regularly. He doesn't want to be a defensive sub or a late game sub, which to me, I mean, hey, maybe he lands with the Miami Marlins in a week and he's playing every day in his hometown. And if so, good for him. But you know, I wonder what the market is going to be for a guy like Nick Castellanos, who has some success. Yes. But also somebody who comes maybe with, I don't want to say baggage, Kevin. That's being over dramatic. But somebody who might not be the easiest guy to get to know in a clubhouse.
You have to know what you're getting, and because I think I know what you're saying. Because I wouldn't say it was baggage either. But clearly the guy wants to play. He now has he left Philly under those circumstances. He did not leave here under bad circumstances, but clearly he wanted to move on. And so, you know, if you're bringing him in, then, you know, there's a certain set of circumstances that he wants to. So you need to be very clear with him. He needs to be clear with you. And I'm just not sure where that fits. Like if you're a young team looking for the future, you don't need Nick Castellanos on the field for you every day. Now, maybe there's a team out there. I'm not his agent. So you've identified a team out there that's trying to win now, and you're going to sell Nick Castellanos as a guy who can play for you every day and help you win. And more power to Nick Castellanos. And maybe because he has every guy's different, right? And he has a family at home, and it's a young family. And this happens all the time. David Peralta wanted to keep playing, but not unless it was the right price. And maybe for Nick Castellanos, it's he wants to keep playing, but not unless it's on his terms, because he has, you know, something else that he could move on to, which is the rest of his life.
You know what's going to happen, and I know what's going to happen, but let's just go on the record. He's going to sign with the Dodgers, and he is going to Trace Thompson the hell out of them every time they play each other. Remember Trace Thompson with the Dodgers?
Not nearly as accomplished as Nick Castellanos, so you could see it happening. But the Dodgers would need him, so maybe he's at home with the kids for a month, and then the Dodgers get an injury or something, and they need him.
Yeah, it's crazy. Kevin, who is the next guy as we look at the Padres' long list of injured players? Who's the next position player who could be ready to go? I can't imagine that both Jace Bowen and Samad Taylor are going to be on the roster the rest of the year.
Well, you're going to get Camposano back at some point. Got to get an update today. Hasn't started his rehab assignment. You know, Lorion will be back when he's healthy. Who knows when that's going to be? Look, who are they going to get back? Manny Machado. you know, that's who they're going to get back. Unless I'm missing somebody, there's not anybody missing from this team. Maybe Jake Cronenworth, who we have absolutely no idea. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, more. Maybe the concussion was an explanation for why his numbers were so abysmal. They have who they're supposed to have, besides Ramon Laureano, maybe, to be doing what they're doing, what they should be doing. Like, right. I love Jake Cronenworth. Everyone knows that. Is he necessary to, you know, for them to be winning more? It would help them a lot, but, and, you know, defensively in their roster, but like, no, I just keep going back to, and I think it's the frustration for the fans. Certainly the frustration for me is Manny Machado needs to hit. Jackson Merrill, who started to hit, needs to hit. And Fernando needs to continue to hit like he is and hit the ball out of the ballpark a little bit more.
Yeah, no, agreed. Manny Machado, it seemed like some of the frustrations boiled over a little bit after yesterday with Manny Machado talking about their frustration. I mean, it's clear that they're feeling this just as much as the fans are.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that, you know, I it's funny you bring that up because I think that sometimes fans do wonder that, right? Right. Like fans put themselves in, like we all do, into other people's shoes and go, oh, man, if I had $30 million, maybe they don't say this consciously to themselves, but they go, maybe I'd be lazy. And so then they project onto the guy making $30 million that he doesn't care.
Right.
And it's like, huh, you do realize what you did there, right? Like you're projecting what you might do onto another human being. And that very well probably means you're wrong. So, absolutely, these guys are frustrated. They're the ones that have to go out there in front of the however many are watching on TV, the 40,000 people in the stands, answer the questions on the camera and with the tape recorder going, and look like, quite honestly, fools right now. And I say that word, I don't mean that word, but you know what? That's what you think in your brain that you're looking like when you're doing this. Mm-hmm. And it sucks because you're used to, think about it, it's not one of us out there. This is Manny Machado, used to, you know, performing at the highest level, and he is performing at nearly the lowest level of the highest level right now.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that could be a whole different podcast, Kevin. What is up with Manny Machado? Let's get into this.
We'll be talking about it. If you know what you say that, and I want, you know, I'm wondering how often you think of this. Almost all I hear from fans is, and now we got to watch this for 8 more years. I think a facet of the frustration is not only that he's letting the Padres down this year, but now you're starting to think, the end has started.
You saw this, Kevin. You covered the NFL forever. When a quarterback drops off, it is precipitous, right? You're good one day and you're washed the next. And I don't think baseball's like that. But if I were a fan of a team that had Manny Machado under contract for another 8 years, I'd look at this and I go, is this the beginning of the end?
I get it.
I think that you and I have seen enough in Manny Machado to not think that, but at some point he's going to have to start hitting, you know?
And here's the deal. None of us can really know right now. If you think that's what's happening, there's the diminished bat speed. That's you know, it's enough for you to look at. There's, and there's maybe what he looks like doing certain things, and you go, if you don't necessarily prescribe right away that that's the answer, that he's getting old, there are things you say, no, that's not what it is. His mechanics are messed up. He's still getting the balls when he's on time, which on time is different than bat speed. And so there's no way to tell. As someone who used to play, who became old, is now still in the game, said to me the other day, you don't know until you know.
Right.
Like you don't really watch a guy aging. We think we do. It's when he's old, we go, oh, yep, he's old. I know a lot of people are absolutely convinced this is the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Mets in town. Mets are 27-35, playing a little bit better of late. They're still in last place in the National League East. Padres are 32-29. Despite all of the catastrophizing, Kevin, they're still 3 games above 500. Heading into this series, let's get into pitching matchups a little bit. Tonight, Christian Scott, 1-0, 2.97 ERA. He's a 26-year-old rookie. He's going up against Michael King. Kevin, you had a really nice note today, or a sidebar about Michael King in today's paper. He's still trying to figure it out on the fly, and yet he's 4-4 with an ERA, just a hair over 3, has been really the linchpin of their rotation so far this season.
It really is interesting. We look at baseball as a game defined by numbers. And so when you and I are maybe we don't have the time to watch the Mets, right? Or the next team, right? We look at the numbers and then maybe we try to go, okay, well, here's what his last few starts were, right? And so someone would look at Michael King, who didn't watch him pitch against the Nationals, and go, oh, wow, 6+ innings and gave up 5 runs. Oh, I see he got up there in the 7th. And that's how his ERA, and that's all you know. He pitched so freaking amazing for most of that game. It was like one of the best pitched games I've ever seen somebody who didn't have his best pitch. That's for sure. 47 pitches through 5 innings. It was ground ball after ground ball to the right side. Like Tatis was getting his workout. It was amazing how well he was pitching. But because he doesn't have that sinker, then the changeup started getting hit, and then he went away from the changeup. The hitters knew he didn't have anything else, and he walked a guy. He hit a guy with the sinker, and my point, this guy is pitching amazing, but he's not going to take that next step and be 2024 Michael King until he gets the sinker, and we won't know, and he won't know until he's out there tonight.
Yep. Yep. Saturday. This is an interesting matchup of styles here. Got Nolan McLean, kind of pedestrian numbers, really. 3-4, ERA of 4.2. He's a 24-year-old rookie. He was amazing last year. He's got amazing stuff. Big, strong kid. Going up against Griffin Canning, who has yet to win a game with the Padres. I will argue to you that he has looked better than a guy with a 7 ERA.
Yeah.
During his time.
For sure.
But, you know, he's still, you know, still walking some guys. He's been better, air quotes, at home with an ERA of around 5 than he has been on the road, where he has an ERA of around 12. To me, that's interesting. Griffin Canning, of course, was one of the unsung heroes last year for the New York Mets before he got hurt, signed with the Padres during the offseason. And Sunday...
Yeah, he's been good. McLean, I think, had a call. Speaking of, going back and doing my research, a couple... starts big numbers that inflated his ERA. This is another one of the guys they're facing that is capable of being a Zach Wheeler on them. This guy's good.
Yeah. Yeah. First time ever facing the Padres, by the way. So that's kind of fun. Then you get into Sunday, Randy Vasquez, 5-3, 3.31 ERA, has not been very good in his last 5 starts or last 3 starts or so. Has an ERA over 5. He's going up against the dreaded TBA for the New York Mets.
Randy's been the last few starts, the 4 or 5 starter that you thought that he was. That's what Randy's been. And you know, it's hard to get too upset at that, don't you think? Like, now, was he pitching and was he holding his own as their number 2 starter? Maybe even their number 1 starter for a while? Yes, but put that in perspective. They don't have their, you know, best starters right now. And every good pitcher, which means if you're in the major leagues, you're capable of, you know, having 3, 4, 5 starts where you look, I mean, amazing. People can't figure your stuff out. You're feeling yourself. Randy's got good stuff. All Randy is a number 4 or 5 starter, and he's a damn good one. And so that's where Randy Vasquez is.
Yes. Yes. By the way, you think the Padres have some injury troubles. Mets are missing Francisco Lindor, Kodai Senga, Francisco Alvarez, Tyrone Taylor, Ronnie Mauricio, Jorge Polanco, Clay Holmes, Tyler McGill. We can go down the list. This has been a team that has both been bad and also a little bit snake bit. You know who has not been bad? Juan Soto. For a guy who gets, I think, a lot of attention and a lot of negative attention, he still leads this team in OPS, home runs, second in RBIs, second in steals, for God's sakes. I'm not sure anybody is worth what the Mets are paying Juan Soto, but he's a really, really good baseball player, isn't he?
You know, he really is, man. He's capable of doing incredible damage against your team. And heck, he did damage while he was on your team, Padres fans. You know, it's a special player, and I do like to watch him. I can get some of the negativity that is thrown his way. I can understand it a little bit, but he is a special, special player.
What was it like covering him? That was a weird time for him, wasn't it?
It was a weird time for him. And remember that he was like, you know, whatever, 27 or something, 26, right. Like whatever right. It was, right? Like young guy still, absolutely, absolutely aware of how good he is. That's the nicest way I can put it. You know, everyone else here was getting a contract. He was putting up good numbers. It was a disappointing season. He believes very strongly in some certain things. Yeah, it wasn't great. Look, guy was their best player in 2023. Now, it was the emptiest 950 OPS or whatever, you know, whatever it was. It's the emptiest one I've ever seen, with a lot of walks when there should have been hits, a lot of singles when maybe they should have been homers. But awful hard to complain about how good he was that year. And no way will I ever put 2023 on Juan Soto.
My lasting Juan Soto memories, there are two. One of them is the night he made his debut with the Padres. I just remember thinking of all the possibilities that awaited them because they had Juan Soto, right? He shows up that night with Brandon Drury, with Josh Bell. Josh Bell. Guys have that news conference before, right? And it's Drury who hits the home run, if I recall correctly, in that game.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I remember, you know, when...
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead, please.
Oh, and then I remember Juan Soto flying out to the warning track in a must-win game late in the season against the Diamondbacks at Petco Park. I believe they were playing a doubleheader or something weird like that. And he hit what could have been a walk-off grand slam that might have changed a lot. And instead, I believe it was caught at the warning track. And that was when I realized that Padre team wasn't very good. And probably wasn't going to make the playoffs.
What I think about is a lot of walks when a runner was on second with two outs, when Juan Soto can hit almost anything. And, you know, gosh dang it, Juan, no one else is hitting. Got a guy on second in a one-run game, and you need to be the guy to get the hit right here. And he got the walk. Right. And so the on-base right. percentage was up above 400. And it just wasn't helping in the way that a player like Juan Soto could. That's like, he's an incredible player, but he just wasn't what the Padres needed, what they were paying for, 30 million, 31, whatever it was a year. But you, that night, that is one of the, I haven't ranked, but let's call it one of the top five nights in Padres baseball history. And the reason is because I think you alluded to it, like what it said about who the Padres were at that, you know, where they were going, where they could go, where they expected to go. That nothing was too big for them. They had just traded for Juan Soto. Like that is a franchise defining moment. Now, we'll see what history says about it. Could be franchise defining in that you got one of the greatest players ever and you did nothing with it.
But you know what? Without Juan Soto, you don't have Dylan Cease, Michael King, Randy Vasquez, Johnny Brito. Trent Grisham is a different show, but somebody else paid Trent Grisham for a year, and then he became Willie Mays. You know, to me, that's the thing that people forget, is it's not like they let Juan Soto walk away, right? In fact, many of the best players, or at least pretty darn good players on the Padres right now, you got for once.
Yeah. What AJ Preller did there, I love talking AJ Preller trade trees. I love it because it's fascinating and you can go so many different directions. So great point on that. And also it's just like that just changed everything. Like there's not all these sellouts. It's not just winning. Yes, winning is huge. It's names. They brought exciting players in. They're not playing exciting baseball right now, but right. they changed like what fans here knew they were gonna see, That Juan Soto was a big part of that. And so I just, I'll second guess that trade. I'll never say it was wrong. Second guessing is a part of the trading, you know, of the whole trade business. That's what we do. But I'll never say it was wrong. I absolutely think it was a really good trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly changed the trajectory of the franchise. How won't be known for a while, but it changed the trajectory somehow. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode. Today is no different. This is a listener request one. Will Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a home run this weekend?
I always want to say yes, because I've seen it so many times and it's so vivid, though, you know, it's a long time ago. But yeah, I always want to say yes. He is hitting the ball better. I hope we're not giving out betting advice, but that home run he hit in Washington made you go even more puzzled, because it's like, that's exactly what you thought would happen. It'd just be this bullet. How did that not happen before? So yeah, how does it not happen again?
Yep. I think Fernando Tatis, if he were to hit a home run in a big situation at Petco Park, I think that would go down as one of the early highlights of the season. And before, again, Nick Castellanos, I will say this. I think that the highlight of the Padres season so far was his home run in the ninth inning. Two, three weeks ago, right?
I mean, it was one of the defining, along with the three Gavin Sheets home runs, the five runs against the Mariners in the ninth, without a doubt. I mean, without a doubt. And Manny put it right. Manny's a friend of his, of course. But you know, basically Manny's point was, if they get where they want to get to, they'll have to look back on Nick Castellanos having helped them get there.
Yeah. Maybe Nick Castellanos gets a playoff share or a chunk of a playoff share.
Maybe Nick Castellanos comes like Jorge Alfaro and throws out the first pitch of a game or something like that and yells, let's F, you know, yeah. Maybe that's what Nick Castellanos does.
Yes, I do love, by the way, my favorite factoid from the Washington trip, and then I'll let you go. Lucas Giolito has LFG written on his glove. And I thought, wow, this guy's totally all in on the Padres. He's embraced the whole ethos. And then you go, Lucas Frost Giolito. Those are his initials. Anyway, I like it.
Perfect.
I liked it. Padres Mets, 3-game series at Petco Park starting tonight at 6:40 p.m. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.